Welcome to Our Town, this program on this beautiful sunny Tuesday is blessed with not one, but two special super guests representing themselves first because they are individuals and also representing Birdcage Theater. We have Gwen Cagle and we have Herman Tweeter, and we have a story for them to tell because they're going to educate us about the upcoming production. If I have my number right, it begins on the 9th of May.
True.
And I'll let one of the astute guests here. Hi to both of you, by the way.
Hi to you, too, and thanks for having us.
Good morning. Yes, indeed.
Oh, lovely to hear. Look at that lovely chorus we got here. And so... Yeah, let's start with that.
You want me to read this? Okay. This is the next upcoming play, as he said, on May 9th. It's called It Runs in the Family, and it contains the usual assortment of farcical nuts running in and out of doors, mistaking everybody for somebody else. The main character, who is a Dr. Mortimer, tries to fend off a paternity suit, a wife, a punkish son, and various other lunatics so that he may at last deliver the Ponsonby Lecture in an international conference.
All right.
So if that's not enough of a mouthful for you, you need to come see this.
Is this guy a central character, or is he supposed to be some kind of a hero? That's what I want to know.
Both.
Yeah, both. I don't know.
He sees himself as a hero, but he is definitely the central character.
Boy, this sounds a little comical.
Yes.
And what can you tell me at all about the background as to who chose the play and why and where it came from, where it's been?
I can give you a little of the background. The play was chosen by Laszlo Sontag, who is our director. And originally, I was supposed to direct another play, but unfortunately, I got a kidney stone. I had to go in the hospital and then other things. So he was good enough to step in at the last minute, and he chose this play. It's actually written by an Englishman named Ray Cooney.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, his wife, Layla, who, as you know, has been with us for about 10 years now. And, of course, Laszlo's been in about 7 or 8. She's in the play, too, and she's also the assistant director. And stepped in at the last minute and, to save the season for Birdcage, which, our hats are off to him in regards to that. Because I wanted to, but I knew that I couldn't give it the time or the effort that I wanted to. But I am in the play. I've got a smaller supporting role. I play a character named Sir Willoughby Drake. And to give you a quick description, he's a bit of a pompous ass.
All right.
It's good typecasting, to say the least.
Oh, come on now, Herman.
I'll turn it over to Gwen now. She can tell you a little about her character.
Okay, and I play Rosemary Mortimer, who is the wife to Dr. Mortimer. And I'm supposed to be the oblivious wife who doesn't understand that her husband is a liar and a cheat.
Now, that can't be easy for a woman to play a dumb woman. No way. That's why they call it acting.
Right? And and it just goes on from there because it's like from the first time he opens his mouth, it's like, yeah, right. And I'm supposed to believe that.
Yeah, okay. All right. So it's sort of a central character based, and then all the other critters radiate around.
Right.
Yeah, there's
right.
a lot of little subplots going on in and out around Dr. Mortimer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. It's because I have season tickets, and of course, it wasn't what was printed on my ticket.
Right.
And but I don't worry about what it says on the ticket. I just know what the date is and go and sit down and enjoy.
That's wonderful.
Never, never. I guess I should say I've never been disappointed. some I've enjoyed more than others, but there's something about sitting somewhere and having people up there knocking themselves out to entertain you. It makes you feel, I don't know, special.
Special, that's what I was going to say. I hope it makes you feel special.
Just think it. Just think of that. Yes. They could be doing something else, but what we don't realize is the time. Now, you say this was sort of a last minute switch, so what do you guys do learning this stuff when you don't have a whole lot of time?
We rehearse 6 to 7 days a week, 3 to 4 hours a day. Wow. And we just cram like it's, you know, an exam or something, because every day we're in there and we're just, you know,
and Gwen and I live close to each other, so we cue each other, which helps a lot. I mean, that makes all the difference in the world when you've got somebody to work with and they're cueing you, and it goes back and forth that way, you know. It's a question of, everybody pitching in and cooperating. And it's a good cast, though, overall. You know, Damon Robeson plays the lead in it, Dr. Mortimer. He's done a lot of things there, as you know.
Sure,
he's been on the board and everything else. And I worked with Damon. I had the pleasure of, when we did Sunshine Boys together. That was a lot of fun. And like I said, the rest of the cast is very solid, too. So, we feel good about it. And with Laszlo, stepping in like that, our hat's off to him. And,
I hadn't seen him on the stage for a spell, so I didn't realize he was still very active. Mm-hmm. That's very good. Yeah. And Lila for even longer, my goodness.
Yeah, that's right. So it's good that they're back again.
And it's a pleasure working with both of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Delightful people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, what are the dates?
May 9th, 10th, and 11th. Mm-hmm. That's the first weekend. And then May 16th, 17th, and 18th.
Oh, wait a minute. Isn't there that Thursday?
Right, that's the 16th.
Oh, that
should
is the
16th. 16th is what we call a tightwad Thursday, so the tickets are half price.
Half price.
Right. And then the other days, the other 6 days, are $15. With the Sundays being a matinee starting at 2, and the Fridays and Saturdays being an evening performance starting at 7:30.
And I think it's $10 for children under 12.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So what we need to do is get the word out. That's for sure. Here I sit. Here's this microphone, and here's this radio thing that's been going on since 2002. And if it weren't for a very, bless his soul, he's gone now, but a very wonderful birdcage critter, we wouldn't be here, I don't think. You must know who I'm alluding to is Tom Haviland.
Oh, Tom. Yeah, Tom Overland. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And, he was one of the major thrust behind it, and I think it was his connection with Birdcage that really made a difference here.
Right.
Because this station is under the nonprofit 501c3, whatever you call it, Bird Street Media Corporation. And, of course, that's an offshoot of Birdcage.
Yeah.
And without that nonprofit status, this station would have never even gotten a license. Yeah. So we owe a lot to him and to his memory, and I only wished I'd lived in Oroville longer so I could have partaken in a lot more plays that he was involved in.
Yeah, fortunately, I did have, the opportunity to work with him over there, so it was a great pleasure. And God knows, he was like 24 hours a day involved with everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys... Okay, here's a question for both of you. Must have happened somewhat. Someone has a script, and they got a play, and I assume they might have a part in mind for you before they even talk to you. What happens if you look at this thing and say, "Man, that's a turkey. I don't want my name associated with that," or else, "I don't know if I could play a part." So it's a long, drawn-out question. I'm looking for some long answers here, like, I can't play the part because of the part, or I don't like that kind of a thing. I mean, what kind of thing goes into somebody's mind other than I'll grab it?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I came up against this with this play. I think I'm still enough of a novice that when, you know, scripts are out there and they have auditions, I'll go to any of them, you know, just about, and if I'm available. And so turning down parts I haven't done. Given this part, it's something totally different. It's a stretch for me to do this. It's you know, a stretch up. And I was doubting my own self that, you know, I can't do this. What does he think I can do? What does he want to pick me for this, you know? And I kept saying, I can't learn my lines. I can't keep them in my head. I can't. He said, you'll get it. You'll get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. So it's been a real nice challenge for me to stick with this. And
do you wake up at night with lines going through your mind? Do you find it hard to do anything else?
It. Yeah. I wake up at night with lines. I wake up in the morning with lines, you know, and I have to keep us. Look, this is time to sleep now. You can't just be in this book all day long, right?
Yeah. Well, with me, the pattern is somewhat like that as far as mine is, it's interesting. I'm able to go to sleep at night, but when I wake up in the morning before I even get out of bed, I start rattling them off, you know, as much as I can. But I'm very fortunate, and I thank God in the sense that, you know, at this stage of my life, I could still have some kind of a memory, you know.
Yeah, I know what you're hinting at, Herman, where did I leave my glasses? What am I doing in this room? Things like that.
All right.
But things you concentrate on,
and
that works.
It does. Something I wanted to say, that it's really a great pleasure to be able to work with someone as experienced as Herman.
Yeah.
Because I look to him for advice a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I think most little towns have some amazing, outstanding, stunning people just kind of lurking around.
Oh yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing, because it enriches and just because you might live in nowhere USA, or some crossroad between one cow town and another,
it doesn't mean nothing happens
mean
there.
Diddly, no way.
That's for sure.
And this is a good example because people think it's up in the middle of nowhere up here, but
Oroville, where is that?
Yeah, is that in California?
Well,
really?
Come visit and you'll find out.
Yeah, there you are, and it's worth visiting. You guys are.
I think so.
What do you? I'm sort of hooked, because I just learned about it, and then we just get season tickets every year. All we have to do is know when the performances are. I don't have to be sold. But I think about, when you go there and there's not many people in the audience, I think of the actors and actresses and how that affects them. But the other thing I think of is, do either of you know anything we're missing in terms of publicity? How, if somebody waved a magic wand at you and you could have your way, does either of you have any idea of, I would do this, I would add that to make it more known? What do you think can be done just to keep the folks coming and to make this a place of people seeking? Any ideas?
Well, I think with just about everything in life nowadays, it comes down to funding.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be great if we had the funds to be able to have just a publicity department or publicity person who could be out there and, you know, put out the flyers and do the TV spots and, you know, do the radio spots and get the word out there, and not only encourage people to come to the Birdcage, but also encourage them to participate in what's going on. Even if you don't want to be on stage, there's plenty of things that you can do, you know, behind the stage, and you're just as important, you know. But they're so, like I said, you know, the funding is really narrowed for just about everything nowadays in life. So It's not that we don't try.
You know, possibly things like attending lunches at fraternal organizations.
There you go.
The Lions,
yeah.
Eagles, or mm-hmm. you know, whichever. And we have, you know, enough of them in town here, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I know it runs in cycles because, you know, going back 10 years, as I said, we were doing well, very well, you know. And I was proud of the fact that when I did Man Who Came to Dinner, I broke a house record. You know, I directed that show, and we were sold out just about every night, you know.
Wow.
But I don't know. Like you say, it maybe just runs in cycles, you know. But I'll say one thing. I know this is, you know, when you're playing to a very small audience, they're still there, and you owe them, a performance. You shouldn't have that attitude of, oh. I'd like to tell you a quick story about that. This was back in Maine when I worked in a rep company. They had a policy, if five or less people showed up, we did not have a performance. And one Sunday evening, only three people showed up. We were doing Othello that night.
Wow.
But they were nuns. And they'd come 60 miles. So we said,
how do you say no?
How can you say no? So we did it for the three nuns.
Oh my God.
Loved it, you know. So.
And okay, what about the esprit de corps? What about the morale of the players?
This show, it's pretty good, and most times it is, you know. I mean, occasionally there's clashes, of course,
yeah.
you know. But more times than not, people manage to get together. And especially that last week, you suddenly realize, oh, my God, we're going to open in about 3 or 4 days. We better get our act together. I better get mine together.
And the realization that, oh, my goodness, we can do this. We do understand what this is about. We got it, you know.
Yeah.
And the closer you get to opening night is when you start feeling, you know, those butterflies of, I got this, you know. And you've developed your part and you've got your lines and you've got your blocking and you're like, okay, I'm ready to go, you know, and just the anxiety, not the anxiety, but the anticipation,
right?
You know, it builds and builds and builds, and I really like doing this a lot, partly because it's on a volunteer basis, so I don't have that pressure of I'm getting paid to do this, you know, so that, you know, I've got to do this many shows in this, you know, amount of time. I get to pick and choose, you know, and. So being that some people say, well, you don't get paid for this. No, this is what you do, the commitment that you have from your heart, you know, and your desire to give back to your community or to be at least part of your community.
Sure.
You know, it still amazes me sometimes when I'll do things like I'll go to the grocery store and people will go, I've seen you. And I'm thinking, where? What did I do?
Shoplifting. What else?
No, right. When they mention the theater, then I can calm down and say, oh, yes, I have.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's to me, not having ever done it and knowing I never would, I can see a definite reward if there's something you like and something you care about.
Yeah.
And not just to be able to do it, like I like to go fishing or something, but to do something public. And people come to observe you having fun.
Yeah.
Doing what you like.
Exactly.
So, but the opening night, you guys, I know I shouldn't even ask. Jitters ever or anything like that?
Oh, goodness.
Or before the curtain goes up every night?
Every night.
Let me tell you this. This is... Well, from a director's standpoint, but an actor's too. If I hear an actor tell me he's not nervous, I don't trust him. If you ain't got butterflies, you know, something's wrong.
Not putting enough emotion into it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just like in sports, you know, you got a ball game, especially if it's, you know, a big important. Well, even I get to, there's that thing, you know, okay, you know, the anticipation of it. And that's good because... I had an acting instructor years ago who he said, use that energy when you get on that stage, you know. that's there for you. Use yes. it. And it's true.
I never thought of that. It's almost like yeah. it's created inside yeah. you.
Yes. To motivate and you and get you choice. Out there. Yeah.
Right. You can't run away. No. So you might as well take that energy right.
And go with it.
Go yeah. with it.
I know. Sweet. Before every performance, I have these butterflies, you know.
Yeah.
And at first I used to try and, you know, keep them from happening, but I was yeah. never successful. So then after talking with Herman, you know,
that's
and he explained this thing of using
advice.
It, you know,
absolutely.
Then and if I don't feel them, and you know, I know I'm not ready, but fortunately mm-hmm. I felt them all along. Mm-hmm. But when I feel those, feel them start to come up, you know, then okay, now I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go on stage. I'm like that horse, you know, behind that gate, you know,
yeah.
and I'm, you know, let me out there. Because
open
when you,
gate.
As soon as you get out there on stage, you forget about the fact that you had butterflies.
Sure.
It just goes away and you just go with it.
And the nice thing is, especially in comedy, when you get the first laugh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, they're with us. We got them.
They're listening. They're listening.
Right, you know, they're listening, you know, and then just you go from there, you yeah. know. Yeah. That's the wonderful part about it, you know. I know it's
well. That okay. That's comedy, but then
yeah.
there's the reverse.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, that was my. I just wrote down.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
interesting. You're a mind reader, Herman. Just if you didn't know, I wrote down two words here that I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
And it was audience awareness. And before I finished writing them, you brought the subject of audience awareness.
Yeah.
But that's got to be the reverse.
And then when it comes to
when
the
you're
drama,
getting no feedback.
Yeah. When it comes to the drama. You know,
it's
again, there's this thing of when they're nice, when you hear nothing, you know, just silence out there, they are with you. If they're coughing, you know, moving around in their seats or whatever, you don't have them.
Remember know? In The Good Doctor, the scene that you and I did with
yeah.
the Dan and the woman in,
yeah.
in the park? And it was small, you know, but it was so powerful because when we got to the end and we would go to walk off stage, there was this absolute silence,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people and it was right at the end of the play, too. And people came through the meet and greet line and they had tears in their eyes, you know, and they said, oh, that was just so touching, you know, so So you can feel from the audience, you know, when it's something very dramatic, like you said, you know, you have this silence and it's like a deafening silence where you couldn't put, I mean, more so it's even more silent than hearing a pin drop.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, then your antennas are always sort of out there.
Mm-hmm. You try,
even
yeah.
though you're doing,
yeah.
you're certainly aware of what's going on in the
room.
Oh,
absolutely. Yes. You know, there's that ear that's out, you know, just making sure that, are they with us or are they not with us, you know,
yeah.
That kind of thing. And it's, and you know, I mean, I've experienced it as an audience, you know, for instance, you know, I was fortunate enough to see the great Laurence Olivier live. Magnificent, you know.
Yeah.
And Alec Guinness was another one, too.
My.
You know? I still remember he played Dylan Thomas in a play. It was on Broadway. It was called Dylan. His opening scene is a monologue. He's sitting on a bar stool. He's got a cigarette hanging from his mouth. And he delivers this monologue. I was sitting up in the balcony. And I heard every word so clear every sentence. You know, and so he still got the cigarette hanging in his mouth. You know, that talk about training. I mean, they
yeah.
have that training too, you know, that whole thing. Because the thing is, again, some nights they show up to theater and they physically they not be feeling too great.
Right.
But they have to fall back on their technique, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have enough of it that they can carry them through a performance even if they're not always feeling all that well, you know. It's
yeah.
still a very, very wonderful performance. That's the thing. And, you know, I mean, I love movies, but there's nothing like seeing a live performance. Nothing, you know, it just it captures the spirit of the play. Yeah.
Right. It is so radically different.
Yeah.
No matter how stunning and now with the movies, I haven't gone for actually very much for years, and I went to one not so long ago, and I got in there, and I was assaulted with extreme loud noises and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to me, I don't even remember what the movie was, but I know it wasn't like something on the stage or like the movies used to be,
yeah.
where you sort of felt you were
became
sneaking,
a part of it.
Yeah,
yes,
you were sneaking
exactly.
in to be there.
Yeah.
And now it's just blare this and blare that and
yes.
sell the popcorn, I guess. I don't know what it is.
I don't know either.
So that's a good reason for people to be coming to Birdcage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even the coming attractions in movies are that now. And they have about six or seven before they start the movie,
sure,
you know.
Sure,
and
sure.
like you say, the music is blaring away, and it's like, please just start the movie.
Yeah, it's painful to my ears.
It is.
Frankly. It really is.
Oh,
well. Well, they could learn a little bit from Birdcage, these guys.
If only we could teach something.
Yeah.
Hey, got to get back here to where we are. We're on the radio. Got to say that. It's KROV Oroville, 91.1 FM. Heard now, KROV.FM. And Shoutcast Radio and TuneInRadio.com, both of them. And 91.1 is, our website is KROV.FM, yeah. And, of course, we're on 91.1, and we're beaming out as far as our little antenna can reach. Kind of like nostalgia when we started on Bird Street. We had a little antenna on the Oroville Inn with 100 watts. And sort of like we've come back there, except we're in the big wide world and working hard to get our reach out. So thanks for tuning in. And I'm hoping folks will be listening to this as we put it up on the web after this program is over. And we have Gwen Cagle and Herman Tweeter, Birdcage Theater here in town. It runs in the family. Yeah, with a title like that, I guess it probably had to be a comedy, and unless it was a mafia story or something.
Yeah, right.
So you know it's going to be fun. And starting again, tell me again with the times.
May 9th and Friday and Saturday, 9th, 10th, and 11th. The Friday and Saturdays are 7:30 p.m. appointments. And then the 12th, which is Sunday, is a 2 o'clock performance. And then we have May 16th, 17th, and 18th. 16th, 17th, 18th. Is that right? We've got the Thursday.
That's a week.
Thursday be the 16th, okay. 16th, 17th, 18th, yeah.
Okay, and yeah. The Thursday performance is at 7:30, and it's also tightwad Thursday, which means tickets are
half price.
And then that Friday and Saturday, we have the evening performances, and then the final one that Sunday at 2 p.m.
Okay.
So.
I hope this is worth my time.
No. So. We hope everyone within earshot will pass the word on, and you know, the more the merrier. We'd
bring
love
the
to
family.
See you. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Bring the family and bring a friend or two.
Right. It's that kind of a play.
Yeah.
You can bring the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of them I've ever seen there are kind of, there's some
almost
exceptions to it, but bring the kids is a good deal. Yeah. All right, so what else do you want to talk about? Anything? Theater, life, love, hate, favorite food?
I'm loving this weather.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make a trip the 1st of June. Well, I'm going back to Chicago where I grew up. My grandniece is getting married, but it's be interesting because she's marrying a young man who's Hindu. And they're going to have two ceremonies. On Friday, they're going to have the Hindu ceremony, and then on Saturday, they're going to have a Christian ceremony.
Wow.
So that'll be an interesting thing to see. I've been told that in the Hindu ceremony, he's going to come riding up on a horse.
Oh, wow.
So this I've got to see.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, that's once the show's over, that's what I'm planning on doing. And then I'll get to see my brother, who's 93 years old, God bless him. He's legally blind, but his mind is still good. You know, I talked to him on the phone. I mean, his memory is, something that he's got, and he, when we talk, I don't have to hesitate about saying anything. He's right there. It's amazing.
Seems like you just went back to Chicago to see him.
I was going to go at Christmas time, but I didn't go.
Oh, okay.
I was there last summer.
Yeah.
Right. because I used to be invited, well, I still am, to a golf outing. My dear late friend Al Ryan, we grew up together as boys. His sons have an annual golf outing called the Ryan Open, you know, and they always invite me. Now, I can't play anymore because this one eye is not that good, but they always have a dinner at the end. The wonderful kind of ironic thing is that they hold it at the place called the Butterfield Country Club, and one of his sons is the president of the club, and the other son is the treasurer. And what's ironic about it is their dad and I used to caddy there as boys, you know. And then the next thing you know, the sons did the same thing. In fact, the sons, three of them, got what they call the Chick Evans Scholarship. Chick Evans was a famous golf amateur from the Chicago area. He was a wealthy man. And he established scholarships for young caddies as long as they met the certain criteria, you know, the good averages and their demeanor as caddies and the whole thing. And three of the boys won these scholarships to go to the University of Illinois. So, you know, it was quite something. And like I say, it's always such a wonderful pleasure to go back and mingle with the family, and we just hang out together.
Boy, you're lucky to have those ties.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got just a few miles between here and there. So
I
assume you initiate communication, though. You must call your brother. You call people back there. You don't wait to hear from them.
No. They're pretty good about calling me too. My sister-in-law and I, my one brother Al passed away 4 years ago, but she and I, you know, communicate a lot, because when I go back, I always stay with her, you know.
Okay.
And so, you know, it makes for a nice, it's a nice relationship. And my nieces and nephews too, they've all been, you know, good to me. But this is going to be interesting to see this wedding, the two versions, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we know the Christian version, but I want to see the Hindu version.
All right. For sure. Riding in on a big white horse.
Yeah.
Only one other thing, Herman. Yeah. I see this cap on your head with the letter C. I think that stands for crazy or something like that, doesn't it? What's that C all about?
Yes, it does, because it stands for Cubs, and I'm still a Cub fan. They're breaking my heart to have for them. And also, if you'll notice on the back, what does it say? Bleacher bums. I got this hat. I know where I got this. I got it at a golf outing back there about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we went to the dinner. They were handing out little prizes, and so when they said, what do you want, Herm? Well, I told my nephew, I said, get that Cub hat for me. So I've had, I live and die with them, and as all those people back there do. And, you know, God knows if they ever, before I, my own brother says, you know, my 93-year-old brother, he says, Herm, he says, sometimes I look up and I say, God, at least a pennant before I go. You know, it's that kind of thing. But, you know, they're our Cubbies, and I still, you know, going to keep cheering them on.
My son told me, I'm not much of a baseball fanatic, but my son told me that that's a place where if somebody from the opposing team hits a single or hits something and the ball goes in the stands, the Cub fans will take it and throw it back out on the field.
That's right.
Bitter they are about opposing teams?
Oh, yeah. A home run, definitely.
Yeah.
It goes right out again, you know. But, you know, I, growing up there, you know, and going to ball games, Chicago, the Windy City, which is true.
Yeah.
And Wrigley Field is right close to Lake Michigan. And I've seen games where if a guy hits a real high fly ball and the wind is blowing, especially into the stadium, you watch that outfielder, he's just, is it going here, is it going there? You know, they have a heck of a time trying to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't because that wind will shift so fast, you know. I don't know if you remember just recently, I haven't seen it lately, but there was a commercial which they shot in Wrigley Field, and it shows like a groundkeeper, you know, out in the outfield right there by the vines and the wall. And the next thing you know, you see a pair of feet sticking out, and he pulls a guy out of there. and he's got his glove and his ball. So anyway,
all right, okay.
But you know, yeah, they still, you know, they still get up there, and then of course at the seventh inning, they always do. Not only do they do the stretch, they sing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game."
Oh, you know? Wow! So it's nice to hear a tradition like that. That's
you know, I mean, they're not vicious fans. They're
just diehard.
They're diehard. That's it. You
know? They just can't see the truth. Let's face it.
Exactly. We can't see the truth. You know?
They know their team are all heroes. Everyone.
Yeah. So, right.
Okay.
So anyway.
All right, Gwen, what about you? What about your beginnings as a theatrical performer?
Well,
other things.
They started way back when I was in school, in high school mostly. And I was involved in the drama class there. And back then, you know, it was a class, you know, and so you got graded and everything. And so I guess that's when I finally got the bug right then. And our school did the play, The Crucible. Now, I'm African-American, black, whichever you want to call, but the female lead of The Crucible is blonde and blue-eyed, okay?
All right.
But I auditioned for the part pretty much as a lark because there is a part for a maid, a black maid in there. Well, this other friend of mine, she's Arabian, and when she tans, she gets very dark, and she's just beautiful. She says, "Oh, you got competition for this role, honey, so don't think Tituba belongs to you." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, then shoot, then I might as well audition for Abigail." She said, "Go for it," right? And I said, "I'm just joking." She said, "I'm not." So as a joke, in my mind, it was a joke. And when I got to, the auditions and I turned to the audience to, you know, give my rendition for the audition, and I don't remember what I said. I just remember when I got finished that people were standing up applauding. And it was kind of frightening because mostly because I couldn't remember, what did I do? Did I do Tituba or did I do Abigail? Because I had rehearsed both. So the next day, coming onto campus, you have to pass the drama class to get onto campus. And the sign was up to say who got what, right? And there was my name as the female lead. And I almost dropped to my knees going, "Oh, my God. Okay, now I'm committed. I've got this part. I got to make good to myself as well as everybody else that I can do this, right?"
Wow.
But it went off so well that we were actually asked to give a command performance to the Chamber of Commerce one evening. And during our class, I think we gave three performances at school. And during the last one, but my parents, none of my family had come to any of them because my parents were just adamantly opposed to, "No, you're not going to do this. School is more important." I was like, "Well, this is part of school. You know, well, because the teacher is a class, okay, we're going to let you do it this time, but no more," right? That very final performance where we had the Chamber of Commerce and they turn up the house lights and we did it in the round. So that meant we were in the center of the stage. And so we're turning, applauding the audience, you know, as they're applauding us. And this one row, I see my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Now there's six of us. Okay. And I was like, "Oh my God, you came," you know. And my mother said, "I didn't know you had it in you."
You've been conning her all your life, and she didn't even know.
She didn't even know.
Come on.
So basically, when I left home, I wanted to go into theater, but you know, I knew I had to support myself. And my father convinced me that, you know, I should become a nurse because at least that way I could support myself. And so I tried to fit dramatic arts and nursing in together as a double major, and I was killing myself. So I had to decide which one is going to feed me. So of course, nursing went out. And three years ago, my youngest brother, who is one of my biggest supporters, I was telling him that I'm feeling kind of lost right now because physically I'm at a state where I'm on disability and I'm at the age where nobody's going to want to take me back. and all because I'll be a, you know, medical and financial liability to them. And not that, you know, mentally I can't do something, but physically I can't carry this workload anymore. And I really don't know what else to do with myself, you know. And he says, well, why don't you go back to acting? I said, gee, I never thought about that, you know. So I said, okay. I said, well, when I get home, I'll call my friend and, you know, and he said, phone? You need a phone? And he hands me his phone.
Whoa.
So it's good. Stage two, act two started from there. And I've been going ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a guy he is.
Yes, he is.
I admire him big time.
I do too.
That was very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big shot in the arm, you know.
Yeah.
And he's been coming to, you know, the plays whenever he can make it. And I hope he doesn't get too embarrassed about this because he's really a very modest and shy guy. But 2 years ago on April 18th, he had a major stroke. And he's recovering from that. Nicely, slowly but nicely, and he's fortunate that all his mental faculties are still intact, and so he hasn't been able to make any plays for a while. But whenever we put them on either the DVD or put them on YouTube, I always send him, you know, either a DVD or a link so he can see it.
That was something I was going to ask. By the way, I understand for a lot of plays, I guess for all plays, there's royalties, et cetera, and there also, aren't there provisions? Don't you dare record it or your fingernails will fall off or something
right,
like
we got to get around, around them, but we have to adhere to those.
Yeah.
And
once
so we adhere to those, then, you know, we can put things
goes,
out.
Yeah.
No, we don't, you know, what do you call it? I forget what you call it.
But, you know, just as a playgoer, I wouldn't have thought of that, but if it was brought up to me before, I thought, I can't. Yeah. I don't know, I can't make this player. Could somebody, can I get a record? No, if you don't see it, you don't see it.
Right, right. So,
okay.
And so that's pretty much how I got started back. And I've been just loving it ever since.
Well, I just want to add a little PS on that. Originally, when we were doing Sunshine Boys, what's Ruby's last name?
Thomas.
Ruby Thomas was a lady that we had cast for the nurse.
Oh, that's right.
And she called me up and said, I'm sorry, but I can't do it. But I have a friend, you know, that might be right. So we were holding our auditions over at the Methodist Church here, you know. And in comes this lady. You know.
And the role was for a 50-something black nurse.
Nurse.
Yeah.
And I was all those.
When she told us she was a nurse, I said, oh
boy.
My God. You know,
typecast.
Yes.
So, you know.
There's nothing else. I fit the character that way.
Oh, how cute.
So then when she read with me, you know, then Wade and I just looked at each other and said, you're on. And she's been on ever since, and we're thankful for that.
Great. Thank you. That's a nice thing about it all. As I've gone for several years, you see critters, you know, coming back again and again. But then before you know it, you got some new favorites because there's opportunity for new folks to get involved. So it's and it wouldn't matter if there never were any new ones, but there has to be just practically.
Yeah. Well, that's
nice to be able to kind of enjoy starting to. You know, might not even know their name. Oh, you know that face because you saw it. I might not even remember what play they were in, but I know I saw this one in
the
play
before.
Yes,
that's what I get. I don't remember your name, but I know your face.
Yeah,
I get it, and sometimes I'm the supermarket.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Some people do remember me and say,
sure.
Okay. Oh, this is just a little side thing, but, you know, I mentioned Wade Guess. You remember Wade?
Yeah, sure, I do.
Well, you probably don't know this, but that little rascal is also an accomplished pianist.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and he is going to, unfortunately, we can't go because it's this Sunday at 7 o'clock at Chico State. He's performing with an orchestra there.
Oh, my.
He's doing a concerto. I think the composer's name is Kobolevsky. But it's at 7 o'clock at Chico. But we saw him perform it in a competition there about, what was it, a couple of months ago?
A couple of months ago, yeah.
And, you know, here's Wade, who's such a wonderful actor, you know, and also a director.
Yeah.
And he's knocking it off.
Tickling wow. my ivory.
You know, yeah.
He was,
I mean,
just, he was great.
So anyway, but I'm sorry that, you know, we can't go because we've got a rehearsal. You know,
sure.
This is our hell week, as you know,
yeah,
that
of course.
Last week. But I told him when I talked to him, I said, if it's at all possible, if you can make a tape of it, I'd love to hear it, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, see, we got it. The talent is here. There's no two ways
yeah.
about
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because I can still remember when I first met Wade. He was, I think, 11 years old.
Wow.
He was in a production at the State Theater. It was a children's production of Oliver. But he didn't play Oliver. He played the Artful Dodger, you know, which is a good role. And Lois and I, my wife, you know, we went at the time. And I couldn't take my eyes off this kid. And it wasn't anything precocious, you know, like sometimes, you know, like, oh,
yeah.
I mean, it was like, kid that young, he knows what's going on.
Yeah, he puts himself into
instinctively,
it,
instinctively,
huh?
You know.
Yeah.
So when I went out to the lobby, you know, we went out to the lobby, and he was out there, you know, greeting people. I looked at him, and I said, you know something? I'm going to find a play for you. I want to do a show. His eyes got real big. I says, yeah. So, and you know, when we got home, I was trying to think, and my wife was wonderful in those days. She says, 1,000 clowns. And I said, of course, because, you know, it's a story about this guy in Greenwich Village with his nephew, and he raises his nephew. You know, it's a wonderful kind of bohemian existence. And the kid, and I said, absolutely. And he was perfect for the role. And ever since, you know, we've been working together. And, of course, then he started directing about 3 or 4 years ago, and he does a good job with that, too. So here he is, you know, playing a concert piano, and he's doing a wonderful job. So,
well, you never know.
Anyway,
yeah, that's amazing. Amazing.
But it's, you know.
There's all kinds of talent in this town,
yeah.
And, you know, we just want to encourage people to, you know, come out and
absolutely,
you know, test yourself. You know, like I say, you don't have to be on stage if that, you know, something that bothers you. But, you know, we need builders and designers. We need
right.
tech people, you know, to work
the lights
and the sound effects and all of that, you know. And
yeah,
so.
that's something that's kind of puzzled me. I know you've got a big building, but it's my understanding. Do you guys use it all? I mean, do you have some place back there with so many pieces of sets that you can't walk through it, or do you kind
of all of that?
Read them? You do
all of that.
Okay.
But we use a lot of things that are there, and people donate things and stuff. But oh yeah, we've got things in there, and we're like, well, do we have? We sure do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody will remember over there in the corner, behind something, underneath somewhere.
There you go. Okay.
And, you know.
And then
so.
We do have, you know, the good thing is we do have a rehearsal room in the back there.
Oh.
So if one play is on stage, mm-hmm. you know, rehearsing, the other one can start rehearsing back there. You know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Okay.
It
props and all
well.
Those, all those
yeah.
clothes
yeah.
and all those. That must
yeah.
be
costumes
immense to trying
and,
to, yeah, costume
yeah.
to keep
everything.
Keep that.
Yeah,
wow.
We need people for, you know, help with all.
There's
of
a
that.
Gotta
yeah.
be an immense amount of work keeping
there is
keeping those things where you can find them again and
yeah,
knowing that they're there. Wow, what a deal. Okay, so it's a real theater, that's for sure. Well, okay, it's getting. Not too late. We got time, but we don't have to also fill the air with our voices. Reminding folks, this is Our Town on KROV Oroville, 91.1 FM, and KROV.FM on the internet. Shoutcastradio.com, tuneinradio.com on the internet. And we've had a wonderful interlude here with Gwen Cagle and Herman Tweeter from Birdcage. Upcoming production, it runs in the family, opening on May 9th, a week from this Friday, I guess that'll be. Mm-hmm. And anything to add, subtract, multiply, say?
I just want to say thank you again for having us.
Right,
we really appreciate this.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure. Boy, I'll tell you, I'd do this for nothing. So there you go.
Well, we do. Yeah. We do what we do for nothing. Right. So.
Okay.
But thank you so much,
sure.
Lee. I mean, really.
And to everybody out there, thanks for listening.
Sure, you bet. Okay, we'll cut it off now and get on with the other programming.